Good day, I'm Jackie Judd with Health on the Hill. Insurance issues are front and center today as the government and insurance companies deal with implementing parts of the health care reform law. Here to discuss all of this, Mary Agnes Carey, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and Drew Armstrong, health policy reporter for Bloomberg News. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Good morning.
Drew, last Friday was the deadline that states needed to let the Department of Health and Human Services know whether they plan to administer an insurance pool for high-risk individuals or if the federal government would do it. This is part of the health care reform legislation. What's been the response so far?
As of Friday, 43 states had gotten back to the federal government saying they were going to either operate their own new version of these high-risk pools or let the federal government step in. What these pools do, just as a rehash, you have people with pre-existing conditions in the state who can't buy or it's unaffordable for them to buy insurance. So the state or a non-governmental entity will set up a way for them to be able to purchase insurance. This is a supplement to existing state programs or, in some cases, when there isn't one, it's $5 billion of federal money that can come in and set up these pools. Now, states are sort of split half and half, and there is definitely some political split on this. Some states that already have these high-risk pools in place at the state level, they're saying, hey, we've got the infrastructure here, send us the money, we've got the know-how, we've got the people, we'll set up another high-risk pool to get the rest of these people with pre-existing conditions in into this new federally funded pool. Other states are going to let the federal government do it. Now, a lot has been made of this as politics. The real truth may be, though, this is a temporary program. It's going to last till 2014. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge amount of money spread around the states, and a lot of states may not want to set up an entire new bureaucracy and infrastructure to care for all these people when the federal government, they think, is pretty capable of coming in and setting up these pools for them. It's just easier for the states. It reduces the burden on states. Some of it's certainly political, but some of it just may be an administrative issue.
You mentioned $5 billion until these are phased out in 2014. Is that enough?
Well, a lot of people are saying it isn't enough. There is concern that you may have such a demand. Again, this high-risk pool is for people who haven't been able to get health insurance for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, they're very sick people, and their claims may cost quite a bit. And there is concern that that money won't be enough. And some states are worried that they'll get left holding the bag. What if they enroll people? What if the money runs out? What if the federal government doesn't appropriate more money if, in fact, it does run out? And that is some of the trepidation and fear around this program for some of the state governments.
And when do the pools need to be established if they aren't already in the states and at the federal level, of course?
Well, the states are already setting up the deadline to get the response right now. I think the actual rollout of the pools is in the next...
I think it's in June.
In June. It's going to happen very, very quickly.
It's one of the earliest implementation items and one of the closest watched because, as we talked about, this is kind of the first test case for the health reform bill.
In what way?
Well, whether the federal government allows the state to do it with federal dollars, whether the federal government goes into an area, how do they handle some of the sickest folks who need help? Does it work as intended? Can they build a provider network? How quick will the payments be? Will the services people need be provided? Will it go as envisioned? You know, Congress writes a bill with all good intentions from the proponent's point of view, and then you have to implement it. And this is one of those.
See how it actually works.
See how it actually works. And that's why people are watching this so closely.
One of the other early implementation issues is this notion of rescission. You've done some reporting on that, Drew.
Yes.
Bring us up to date.
So there's been a lot of noise made throughout the entire healthcare debate on this occasional private insurer policy of somebody gets sick and then the insurer goes back through their old medical records or forms they filled out, looks for things that were inaccurate that might have been fraudulent or say, you know, you forgot to mention some unrelated previous pre-existing condition. And then now that person is sick with an expensive condition like cancer, drops them from the insurance roll saying they misrepresented or they committed fraud. And, you know, the insurer obviously doesn't have to pay their claims. They refund all their premiums and say, okay, you know, now that you're an expensive patient of ours, you know, we're done with you. Of course, people who were in favor of healthcare reform leapt on this as a major injustice, and it's been going on ever, you know, as saying we need insurance reform. This is the reason, you know, look at this poor person who got cancer and then their insurer dropped them. So we had to change this. There was going to be a ban on the policy of rescission, on insurers being able to do rescissions in any way beginning in September 23rd. And Democrats in the House started putting pressure on insurers to enact that sooner. The reality is that there's a number of changes that are required of insurers coming up on September 23rd, covering, I think, kids under on their parents' policies,
right,
under 26.
Yes, right.
it's not expensive for insurers to implement this 6 months ahead of time. You know, especially when you, when the question of kids, you know, you want healthy young people paying premiums. I mean, that's great if you're an insurer. So, you know, bowing to a little bit of political pressure and say, hey, we're going to go ahead and do this early, which is what they did. A lot of them wrote letters. AHIP, the insurance industry's lobbying organization, said, we're going to announce an industry-wide ban on rescissions. This is easy for them to do. These are easy wins. They play nice with the Democrats, makes themselves look good. They, you know, they've been the villains in this entire debate politically from the perspective of the Democrats. They're trying to turn that around a little bit right now, and this is a really easy way for them to do that.
Generate some goodwill.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some protection written into the law, though, for the insurance companies who genuinely believe that some people are committing fraud?
I mean, it's outright misrepresentation or fraud is an exemption for them to allow rescissions practice. I think what Drew is talking about is, for example, someone is filing cancer claims. You look back and there was a previous medical visit to a dermatologist for a minor skin condition, and it wasn't in the original form that was filled out when you got your health insurance policy. That's what they want to stop. If there is, you know, this misrepresentation or fraud, that would be grounds for it. But then again, it all gets to this regulatory process, this implementing of the bill. What will that mean for a health insurer? How will they be able to use those categories? That's another thing I think a lot of us are trying to watch very closely.
Okay. Thank you both so much, Drew Armstrong, Mary Agnes Carey. I'm Jackie Judd, and this has been Health on the Hill.